Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Affordable housing and its discontent. Stuyvesant Town, under new pressure to eliminate affordable apartments, residents are protesting today. And two buildings near Prospect Park are raising different kinds of affordable housing issues. A 23-story tower planned for the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area has neighbors upset despite its inclusion of affordable units. And senior citizens from the Prospect Park Residence, which overlooks the park at Grand Army Plaza, are in court today as their landlord is trying to evict them from their affordable homes to reportedly sell the building to a luxury housing developer. We will start with that one with City Councilmember Brad Lander, a leader of the Progressive Caucus who represents the area and has taken up the tenants' cause and joins us now. Hi, Councilman. Welcome back to WNYC.
I'm Brian. I'm sorry. I'm in court this morning with those residents, so thank you so much for having me on.
Tell us about that. What's happening?
So the Prospect Park residence, as you said, sits right across the street from Prospect Park. 7 years ago, in a truly cruel and heartless act, a guy named Hesha Deitch bought the building knowing that the tax, the J51 tax abatement, would expire last year, and he would then be able first to make money by charging those folks $5,000 and more a month for those 7 years. And then when the tax abatement expired, to mass evict them and turn it into luxury market rate housing. And so earlier this year, he got the State Department of Health to sign off on a 90-day closure and told all 130 residents, many over 100 Holocaust survivors, a Tuskegee Airmen, that they had 90 days to get out. But the residents and their families are really courageous. Some have gone, but many have stayed and are fighting back. And today they've got their day in court, both against Hesha Deitch for some fraudulent actions on his part and against the New York State Health Department, which we believe has been derelict in its duty to protect the health of some of our most vulnerable neighbors.
And listeners, we can take your phone calls on any of these three affordable housing issues that we'll be discussing in this segment. Anybody from or concerned with the Prospect Park residence, 212-433-WNYC. Anybody concerned or live around the planned 23-story tower near the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area, 212-433-9692. And Stuytown, I know you guys are going to flood the phones because there are so many of you who listen. But all right, 212-433-9692. Just let us save some lines for Brooklyn. 212-433-9692 for anybody affected by any of these situations. Our first guest, Brad Lander, on the Prospect Park residence. Is this another example of affordable housing, Councilman, that does not have an official protected status or one that's only temporary, as you were talking about the expiration of this tax abatement, which allows them to put it on the market? So it's actually up to the whims of the market. Is this a structural problem?
This is something that we need to look at and that Mayor de Blasio has said in his housing plan he's going to look at. We haven't seen this before. We all assumed this building had better protections. It is an assisted living facility licensed by the state, and it did have a tax incentive, this J51 incentive that provides affordable housing protections or tenant protections against eviction while it's in place. But when they expire, those protections can disappear, as happened here. This is the first time anyone has seen that I can find in New York this situation where an assisted living facility, there are mass evictions to convert it to luxury housing. But, you know, landlords are good at finding the loopholes. That's in part why Commissioner Vicky Bean and the Blasio administration are saying this summer they're going to start a more thorough look at those tax abatements and incentives and really make sure that we're getting our money's worth. We don't want to be, as we are in this case, giving big tax breaks to someone to subsidize him for a little while, only at the expiration to let him evict all those vulnerable people to make an even bigger buck.
And you couldn't, at the level of city council, or maybe it would take the state legislature, to lengthen that tax abatement and just extend the status of this as affordable housing for senior citizens, including Holocaust survivors, as you say, and others, and extend the requirement on the landlord to keep that status while granting him the tax abatement for many years more to come?
Boy, we'd sure like to. Two problems. One, most of these things, many of these things have to be done in Albany and can't simply be done at the city council. But second, once you make a deal with someone, in some cases, you know, it has to be honored. And so if there isn't an automatic renewal clause, And it's, I guess we're going to have to change the programs. You can't go deal by deal once someone's taken a deal under a program. So we have to change these programs. We have to get longer-term affordability, the right to extend and renew, so we don't hit this situation, which we've just seen so many times in different ways, where a tax benefit expires and an owner takes the building to market.
So if the law gives him this loophole, what is the day in court that you're involved with today actually accomplish, potentially?
A good question. And you're right. Look, what he's doing is cruel, heartless, immoral. The vast majority of people wouldn't do it, but he may have found a legal loophole to profit off an evil act. But the New York State Department of Health has a legal responsibility. When it licensed this facility, it took on the legal responsibility of protecting the health of the elderly people who live there, and it has been derelict in that duty. There was no involvement, public notice, public involvement when they approved the closure, which we believe they did in error, and they have not taken the legally required steps to make sure the closure plan ensures the health of those residents. They're supposed to get one-on-one assistance, figuring out what they're going to do and where they might go. Instead, what they've had is a feeding frenzy of other nursing homes and assisted living facilities coming in. And, of course, many of these residents are older. The floor full of people with dementia. Some are lucky enough to have families that are really taking good care of them, but some not. So this suit is both against Deitch. He did commit fraud here. Even after he submitted his closure plan, he kept marketing and signing new leases for people, telling them they'd be able to age in place, as recently as February when he submitted the closure plan last fall. So there's fraud charges against him.
Really? Why would he do that? That's an incredible allegation, that knowing he was going to sell the building, even having told people he was going to sell the building and its status as affordable housing for seniors, put it up for sale, presumably to be converted to luxury apartments. Even at that point, he was continuing to rent out units just months ago on the premise that this was going to be affordable housing. Is that just so he could keep each unit filled and keep collecting that rent for these interim months?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you're right here. But the normal challenges of affordable housing don't always involve acts of evil, right? They involve the marketplace. This is beyond a market. This is something that people, almost everyone, would know is wrong and cruel and heartless. To do that is really beyond belief. But he did. And more than that, the state health department had reason to know. They were responsible for reviewing the closure plan, getting more active and involved once they knew it was coming. And they got the application last fall. They had a legal obligation to step up and protect people's health. And they failed to do it. They allowed him to continue marketing and bringing new residents into the building. Some of them moved from across the country. They were relocated by their family 2,000 miles after the owner had already decided that he was going to file his closure plan. So,
if you win the lawsuit, what do you win? Who gets redress and how?
Yeah. So we're in court today in front of Judge Wayne Saida. For today, what we're seeking is simply stay, a halt to any further evictions or conversions while the case is heard. And the New York State Department of Health is actually fighting that and saying they should be allowed to move forward with evictions. But for today, we want them to stop any further conversion and eviction actions while the case is heard. We want the closure plan reviewed. We believe it was approved in error. It could be resubmitted, and perhaps it could be approved appropriately. He owns the building, and he may ultimately have the legal right to convert it. But it has to be done right. Tenant health has to be protected. They have to get one-on-one assistance. Until that time, services and the meal plan. We even heard a report that he cut the meal plan. And then there were a couple of days when heat and hot water weren't provided. So this is about protecting their health, providing services, extending the time they can be there, and making sure they get the services. And the
is there also a larger issue, Councilman, of a lack of housing in the city for retired seniors who don't make their working days income anymore? I know we have the SCRE program. That's a senior citizens rent increase exemption. But that's only for some seniors in very specific kinds of housing and income groups. So does this also suggest that larger problem?
Absolutely. The federal government used to be involved in helping build affordable senior housing through the 202 and 811 programs, but those are mostly gone. And New York City is getting much older. We're going to have, a substantial number of older New Yorkers, many more by 2030 than we have today. And we really don't have a plan for affordable senior housing for those who need services, for those who don't need services. One bit of good news is that the mayor's affordable housing plan, for the first time, commits a 10% set aside for seniors and commits to doing more to address senior affordable housing, given the absence of the federal government. And I've got a bill that we're actually hearing in committee next week to create a senior housing task force to look at all these questions. There's some things the city can do, but there are things that we need the state on board for, especially where services are involved. And you're right, this is a growing crisis that's going to be hitting all of us as our parents get older, as we get older, and we need to get started now to do more about it.
Before you go, and I appreciate you stepping out of court for a few minutes to talk to our listeners about this, the next thing we're going to be talking about with our development reporter, Janet Babin, is an issue elsewhere near Prospect Park. I gather that one isn't actually in your city council district, but I think it suggests another large issue that you probably have a thought on, since you're such an advocate for affordable housing, and I think you're an ally of Mayor de Blasio in the way he plans to go about it, and that is the issue of density. So in the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area, which has a lot of low-rise, they want to put this 23-story tower. It will include some affordable housing for pretty low-income people, 42,000 and under. And yet, a lot of people in the neighborhood feel like this is going to, you know, negatively affect the texture of the area and that it's out of proportion and creates too much density. But you guys are said to be for density. So what do you think about that and the issue that it suggests for many areas of the city going forward?
So, as you say, that's on the other side of Prospect Park. Councilmember Matthew Eugene represents that district, so I can't speak to that individual building. But what I will say is that I'm a big believer in well-planned density, in smart growth, where you take a look at a neighborhood, and this is what the housing plan says, and it's what we're starting to get ready to do in the Gowanus area. And you don't just have an individual building goes up that figures out how it can, you know, that's one building in an area that hasn't yet had really any community planning or thinking about what the context should be. You know, in my neighborhood, all the schools are overcrowded. So I'm open to more density at the right locations, near transit, planned thoughtfully, where we're making a plan for school seats, not just pre-K, but, you know, at every level. You know, down near the Gowanus Canal, there's a whole lot of places that flood, and we need to not just, you know, in a hurricane, but even just when it rains. So smart, well-planned density that finds the right location. And, yeah, people will, in many cases, resist even that. You know, none of a lot of people are, you know, don't love change, like the neighborhoods, the way that we love them. I think given the housing crisis, we do need to build more, but we can only believe it's going to make sense for our neighborhoods if we're part of that planning, if we make sure the infrastructure's there, if we have some say in the design and the way that that density is going to come into our neighborhood, have some say in preserving things we love so that it doesn't just destroy, you know, the character, existing buildings. We just are fighting a fight to save the letters of the Kentile Floors sign and include affordable housing. That's hard work. It's not always easy. There's loud voices, but I believe if you move forward, if you involve people, you can build consensus for smart, well-planned density with affordability and attentive to the other things that make growth work for neighborhoods.
City Councilman Brad Lander, a leader of the Progressive Caucus, thanks again for stepping out of court. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC development reporter Janet Babin joins us for the two other affordable housing stories making news right now. One is the very big and formerly very rent-stabilized Lower East Side development Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper Village. The other, a 23-story tower, as we were just discussing, planned for the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area, which has neighbors upset despite its inclusion of affordable units. And we'll take your calls on those in just a minute. Our lines are filling up. We have a couple free. 212-433-WNYC from the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area or from the Stuytown Peter Cooper Village area, 212-433-9692. But Janet Babin, fill us in. What's happening at the beleaguered Stuytown?
Oh, well, at Stuytown, this is a crazy story, as you know, Brian, that goes back, and you have covered this throughout the years as we've seen the changes. But last week, what happened is the servicer of some of the debt of the property took title to the property, to the complex. There was this frantic move by the city to make sure that CW Capital, the servicer of the debt of Stuytown, Peter Cooper Village, now the firm that has title to the property, did not move to sell it, or that one of the other owners of some of the secondary debt of the property make sure that they did not take title to it, because it could have been a free-for-all. And every time this property has been sold in the past, in 2006, we saw this, Brian, affordable units are lost. There are only approximately 6,000 affordable units remaining, because what happened the last time is that, according to the council members in the area, Dan Gorodnick and others, what happens is that we lose affordable units because developers or owners of the property come in and use those 31 exemptions that landlords are given to make improvements on properties and then jack up rents and get them out of rent-stabilized area, get those rent-stabilized units to a market rate situation. And the city doesn't want to see that. The city is working hard to stop it.
So it's like what we were talking about with Councilman Lander regarding the loophole in the law that allows them to kick all these senior citizens out of an assisted living that was rent stabilized. This has been going on for like 15 years now, this erosion of one of the bastions of rent stabilized apartments in New York onto the luxury market, Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village. And so as with the Grand Army Plaza, Prospect Park's Park Residence, is government policy just too weak to prevent it, even while you have the mayor and the governor and everybody running around saying we need to create hundreds of thousands of affordable housing units?
There are those who would say that these 31 exemptions for landlords, these things that landlords can do to improve these apartments, maybe that could be considered a loophole. That is what legislators will have to decide. I mean, now it is legal to do. You know, I've spoken to developers who have no qualms, as I said to you, about saying, you know, well, it took us 10 years and we had to get people out. You know, they routinely think that it's okay to get people out of their rent-stabilized apartments. They sort of write this into their business plan. They write it into the cost of doing business, of getting a property to go luxury, you know. And so I think lawmakers have to consider how the rules can be changed. And again, it's both the state and the city level. If they want more restrictions on things that landlords and developers can do to sort of nudge rent-stabilized people out of their homes.
And tell us about this Prospect Park Tower for people who haven't heard about it.
Well, this is a 23-story property that's being built as of right, which means there was no sort of zoning exemption or ULURP process that this property had to go through, Brian. It's being developed by the Hudson Companies. Today is the end of a two-week period that a judge was supposed to rule on a technicality that would have prevented the building from moving forward. Some of the Prospect Lefferts neighborhood groups did file a lawsuit trying to stop construction on the property. A judge did issue a temporary stay on the pouring of concrete on that site while the judge considers what the group alleged in the complaint. They alleged that the state didn't do a proper environmental evaluation of this property. So it's kind of widely seen as a technicality, but it's a technicality that could slow down this developer. It could send this back to the state for review.
Now, shadows are an issue.
Shadows are an issue a bit in the early morning because this is on the east side of Prospect Park. It's 23 stories. Most of the area is 4 to 6 story buildings, although there are some other, a few other towers that are about 17 stories in the neighborhood. Plaza Gardens is the name of one of those towers. And you can see them from Prospect Park when you're at the Lefrak Center, the new ice skating rink. You'll see them in the early morning. They will cast shadows. We're not talking the type of shadows, though, that you can that you will be seeing in Central Park from projects such as 157. Not as big, 23 stories. But, you know,
and not through the day in the same way.
Right, just in the early morning. But the neighbors argue, you know, that Olmsted, when he built Prospect Park, the intention was that you were supposed to be on a retreat, that you were supposed to feel like you weren't in the city. And that means not seeing any buildings. The developer, the Hudson Companies, argues, hey, you can already see buildings from, you know, the loop at Prospect Park. So we're not doing anything that's going to change the nature, the fundamental nature of Prospect Park.
Nancy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nancy. You're in that area, right?
Hi, I am. I'm actually a member of Prospect Park East Network, which is one of the groups that filed the lawsuit. And I'd like to just say a couple things. One is that we believe we believe that height is related to affordable housing. And we also believe that this building is going to result in a net loss of affordable housing in our neighborhood. The height question is very important because this will be nearly 50% taller than any other building on Prospect Park. All the other neighborhoods around Prospect Park have been allowed to downzone in recent years, so they only allow about 8 or 9-story buildings at this point. Any taller buildings, and Patio Gardens, which your reporter just mentioned, is 16 stories, not 17 stories. Any of those taller buildings came into being quite a long time ago and are sort of, you know, there. But going forward, Prospect Park is quite of an oasis. Anybody who goes to the park knows that once you get inside of it, you don't see the city hardly at all. You don't hear the city. It's a, you know, it's a miracle for us in Brooklyn.
So obviously you want that quality of life sustained. But you just made a loss of affordable housing argument there. Now, in this Prospect Lefferts Gardens area tower, as I understand it, there would be 51 units of new income-linked housing for people making only $25,000 to $42,000. So that's 51 new units. Your argument is on something that you call secondary displacement?
Exactly. So what happens is because Hudson is building an 80-20 building, in other words, 80% of the building will be market rate, 20% will be affordable housing as the state defines it. The 80%, of course, the height is very important in that because those people are going to be getting those luxury views of Prospect Park that really can't be had in any other neighborhood in Brooklyn. And so they're going to be able to charge very high rents. They're in their prospectus, they said a studio apartment would go for $2,000. That may not sound like a lot to people in Manhattan, but out here in our neighborhood, we actually are still a fairly affordable neighborhood. We're a very racially diverse neighborhood. We're a very low-income neighborhood. We're actually one of the densest neighborhoods already in Brooklyn. So we feel that what's going to happen is this is fueling already the tendency of landlords to try to get their rent-stabilized apartments in our neighborhood out of rent stabilization by continuing to raise rents as any way they can, sometimes not legally, and it's very hard to enforce that.
Nancy, I'm going to leave it there and turn back to our reporter. I also want to tell people that it's funny because I said at the beginning of the segment, I know we're going to get flooded with calls from Stuyvesant Town because we have so many listeners there, and instead we got flooded with calls from the Prospect Lefferts Gardens area that filled up all the lines. So with apologies to some of you and Nancy having made a good case, we're going to bump some of you to free some lines for people from the Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village area so we can take one or two calls from there too. So if you're there, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But WNYC development reporter Janet Babin, does Nancy's argument hold water? Or is this, you know, fancy intellectual dancing that even with the creation of 51 units of explicitly affordable housing for people making so little, $25,000 to $42,000 a year, that still there would be a net loss of affordable housing in the area because of the pressure of all those luxury units on the rest of the market?
Well, that is a tough question. Secondary displacement, does it happen? We have seen it happen. But the developer argues, the Hudson Companies argues, if that is what you're worried about, then strengthen the rules surrounding what landlords can do regarding rent-stabilized tenants and don't sue them over secondary displacement. And they say, you know, they're not displacing anyone. I mean, this is an incredibly tense issue in Prospect Lefferts. This is a revered neighborhood. It is a very mixed income community. It's a working class bastion. You feel when you go there a sense of community of 4 to 6-story buildings. It feels cozy. It's near the park. So I understand that people there don't want to lose their affordable housing. I'm not sure if this is the way to get there.
And I read that the area is already zoned for high-rise towers, so they don't need any approval from the city for this?
That's right. This is an as-of-right development. And a few years ago, city planning told this community, Prospect Lefferts, hey, we just don't have the resources to rezone or consider a rezoning or study a rezoning of Prospect Lefferts.
A downzoning to keep it low.
Correct. But, you know, what happened in some neighborhoods a few years ago when they were told that, the council members in those neighborhoods took their own little fund of money that they get and said, here, city planning, use this money and do our downzoning. And one of the people to do that was our very own mayor when he was a councilman in his in a section of his the area that he covered.
Elsewhere, so the question is, did
the councilman in Prospect Leverett perhaps drop the ball, or did someone, could that community have...
Councilman Matuyuji.
Right. Could he have pressured city planning to do a downzoning?
He's got so many needs in his area with a lot of low-income Haitian and other immigrants in his city council district.
And city planning was overwhelmed at that time. It was back in, I believe, 2008, 2009.
So do they have any recourse?
Well, they are in discussion with the city now to consider how they could go back to this neighborhood and possibly do a rezoning. It might be too late as far as this Prospect Leverett's building, the one that's coming on board on, at 626 Flatbush.
Jennifer in Stuyvesant Town. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. I just was calling in. I wanted to mention I'm a Stuytown resident. I've been here since right before it got closed to new tenants, and so about 13 years. And, you know, I'm one of many people who are just like me here. I'm a single mom. I work in nonprofit. I make a middle-income salary. I have a kid with special needs who attends the school nearby here. And, you know, if we lose our housing here, there's no place for us to go. I mean, we have to leave the city. And we're people who are well into our careers, and starting over outside of the city just doesn't seem, you know, like something we should have to do at this point in our lives. And you know, affordable housing is sometimes gets a bad rap. People think it's for people who are quote, low income, unquote. Everybody I know here is a working person who's a hardworking person, and you know, we make decent incomes. It's just an expensive city to live in.
Jennifer, thank you. So as we wrap this up, Janet Babin, does anything tie all three of these cases together for you? Prospect Leverett's, the Prospect Park senior residents at Grand Army Plaza, and Stuyvesant Town?
I think clearly rent stabilization, Brian, is ready for review at the state and city level. I think lawmakers have to consider how important this issue is. If they really want to protect affordable housing, as the de Blasio administration has said, preserving what we have left is key. They need to figure out how they're going to do that.
Janet Babin, WNYC development reporter, on the leaky boat of affordable housing in New York City, even as the de Blasio administration tries to create new units. Thank you very much.
Thank you.